Earth Sky.
Welcome to Earth Sky 22, a 22-minute weekly mix of great science interviews and music. I'm Jorge Salazar. Let's begin with a scientist soundbite.
Science is an adventure. It is an adventure in which you should participate and in which you have a proprietary interest. It belongs to you. And you can be part of the adventure.
You're listening to renowned biologist Edward O. Wilson, professor emeritus at Harvard University. Dr. Wilson is perhaps best known for his pioneering research on how ants communicate using chemical signals and for originating sociobiology, a scientific field that attempts to explain the social behavior of animal species. Our 600-plus global science advisors selected Dr. Wilson as EarthSky's Science Communicator of 2010. Dr. Wilson, welcome and congratulations.
Thank you. Needless to say, I am surprised and delighted to receive the EarthSky Award. I know it's typical to say you're surprised and delighted when you receive an award, but it's true this time for sure. Because I know that it was voted by colleagues and that I must be doing something right. And I am particularly glad to be speaking on the matter to, I hope, what will be a fairly large audience of the people who most matter, those who actually can do something that they have not already been doing, which is paying more attention to science education, and what it's going to mean to this country.
What's the most important thing you want people to know about being a communicator for science?
I think I've had the experience to generalize a bit, and that is because I have been on the Harvard faculty for 42 years, and I usually was teaching by choice a beginning class. And beyond that, it was a beginning class in students at Harvard who were not majors, not aiming to be biologists or in many cases even scientists, because I knew that whatever I could get across about science to them that has meaning and use for them is more likely to be put in an original way. So I have come to it with that attitude as a teacher, and I continue to have it as a writer and lecturer today. I believe that what we lack most conspicuously in science communication today are people who both have expertise and the experience in real science, doing scientific research, but who can also connect the dots. But generally speaking, in science today, in order to be an original researcher, you have to move up to the front and then take a narrow segment and concentrate on it totally. So your discovery may be of interest, at least initially, only to fellow scientists, and then along a narrow front. What we most need in communication of science is that kind of expertise, but also combined by connecting the points. That is, saying what it means, how it relates to other areas of ongoing scientific research and previous scientific knowledge, and what that means, especially with reference to the human condition and the human future.
That was biologist Edward O. Wilson. This is Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. We're taking your questions on Facebook. To find us on Facebook, search for Earth Sky. Explorers have discovered the world's largest cave passage. Hidden in a remote jungle in Vietnam, the underground passages of Hang Son Doong, or River Mountain Cave, are large enough to fit a city block of skyscrapers. It even has its own jungles and clouds. Lindsay Patterson is here to tell us more.
So this cave was discovered by a husband and wife caving team with the help of a local farmer in Vietnam in 2009. They returned in 2010 to explore the cave and make a complete set of measurements to figure out how big this cave really is. So I spoke to a member of the expedition team, a geologist from Purdue University named Daryl Granger, and I asked him what it was like inside the cave. Can you describe some of the features of the cave and what they looked like?
Well, first of all, the cave is enormous. It's difficult to really understand the scale when compared to other caves that I've been in. So it's usually about 100 meters across, and then the ceiling is 100 to 200 meters above your head. So it's big enough to really fly an airplane through. As you're going through the cave, you're climbing over big boulders, some of them as big as houses. And the first part of the cave is it's very wet, so there's a river running through there. And during the wet season, the whole cave there fills up with water, a big torrent of water. The second and third, or the later parts of the cave, are more dry, so the water goes even further underground. Another characteristic of the cave is that it's very green inside. It's got these big dolines, big collapsed dolines that are windows where sunlight can get in, and there are actual forests, jungles growing inside these doline collapses.
Uh-huh. And so that's basically a sinkhole, right? Where?
Right. It's a sinkhole on the surface, and then it will be a skylight that you're looking up at from underground. But these are enormous. They're the largest one is maybe 200 meters across and 400 or 500 meters tall.
Uh-huh. And is there life in these jungles? Can you find animals? Can you find anything else you would usually find in an above ground jungle?
We did find the trees look a little bit different. They're a little bit taller and skinnier, and the leaves are a little bit different, but they're the same species. There were birds flying around. There are actually clouds in there. It's big enough to have clouds. And there were lots of little bugs, things that would fall in and then live in that little small jungle.
Mm-hmm. And so can you give us an idea, like, you know, if a listener was trying to place themselves inside the cave, what would it feel like? How big would they feel in comparison to the size of the cave?
Well, it's like looking up at the Empire State Building, basically. So when you're looking up at the ceiling, it's like looking up at a giant skyscraper. It's so far away. And from one wall to the other is the size of a city block. So everything in there is enormous.
Lindsay, pictures of the cave are spectacular.
Yes, the photos are beautiful, and you can just imagine how incredible it must have been to be inside the cave. And what's really amazing is that there are even more caves in that same area to be explored. Hang Song Dong is only one of a network of caves. There's about 150 in the area. So the organizers of this expedition are planning more trips back to Vietnam to explore the other caves, and who knows what they might find.
Thanks, Lindsay.
My pleasure.
Earth Sky is Lindsay Patterson, and we're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science.
We go together. We are the same. Meet each other in every way. We go together, we are alike. We complement each other. Ah, that's right. At last I have it, even better than I imagined. I can't believe I nearly gave it up. I nearly watched the dream collapsing. I can't believe it, even sleeping I wouldn't dream it. Understandably, I'm feeling satisfied. What an odd and incredible feeling. This is the pinnacle, everything's eventual. Now I'm not sure exactly what I waited for. This is my fantasy, exactly how I dreamed it'd be. What's this? A smile? Goodness, it must have been a while.
This is Earth Sky. Deborah Bird joined us now in the studio to talk about the global night sky. Welcome back, Deborah.
Oh, thanks, Jorge. I'm glad to be here.
What do you have for us today?
Well, Jorge, today I want to teach you how to have an experience of being inside our Milky Way galaxy, traveling around the center of the galaxy. Our Milky Way galaxy, as you know, is a collection of several hundred billion stars. It's 100,000 light years across.
Billions and billions big.
Yeah, that's right. And our sun is about two-thirds of the way out from the center of the galaxy. Our sun and Earth and all the other planets of our solar system move around the galaxy's center, and there are various estimates for the speed the sun travels through space, but the sun's speed is about 140 miles per second.
That's fast.
Yes, it is. So it just so happens that astronomers know which star the sun is moving toward in our journey around the galaxy. And in January, this star appears both in the west-northwest at dusk and nightfall. And it also appears in the east-northeast at and before dawn. This star is called Vega, and it's in the constellation Lyra the Harp. It's a very bright bluish star that you can see very easily northwest in the evening, northeast before dawn. And by the way, our sun's direction of motion toward this star, Vega, and so our Earth's corresponding motion as well, has a special name. It's called the apex of the sun's way.
So if I look in the direction of the star Vega this month, I'm looking in the direction the sun is moving around the galaxy center?
That's right. Northwest in the evening, northeast before dawn. And as I said, we're moving 140 miles per second. Moving at that speed, it takes the sun about 230 million years to complete one circuit of the galaxy. And that period of time is known to astronomers as one cosmic year.
Thanks, Deborah.
Thank you, Jorge.
Earth Sky is Deborah Bird. Find us as Earth Sky on Facebook, Earth Sky Science on Twitter, and at earthsky.org. Sky heard on 1,500 radio stations around the world. Ryan Britton is here to tell us a weird science story about how a common type bacteria might make you smarter and even happier. Ryan, what's up?
Yeah, it's bacteria that's actually found in dirt that might have this effect on you. We really don't know yet, but microbiologists at the Sage Colleges of New York found that feeding mice bacteria that's often found in soil, can actually make the mice smarter. So they put mice through a maze, and the mice that were fed bacteria completed the maze twice as fast as the control group, which received, they were fed no bacteria. So researchers were actually surprised by the marked improvement. It was, as they described, a complicated maze.
So, Ryan, were the mice happy to be solving this maze?
Yeah, well, they displayed less anxiety in the maze. So I'm assuming that mazes are stressful to mice. And so apparently they were cooler about figuring the way out. The interesting thing is that the reason behind all of this is that the bacteria that the mice ate, they found stimulates the growth of certain neurons in the brain that produce serotonin. And serotonin is known as the happiness hormone and is also associated with the ability to learn. So researchers think that this is the source of the increased intelligence and lack of anxiety.
So you're not saying that we should all go out and eat dirt, are you?
No, I wouldn't do that quite yet. As I mentioned earlier, there's no evidence that this works on humans. Also, we're pretty well exposed to this type of bacteria on a daily basis just by walking around outside. But the one thing that researchers point out is that there could be eventually a case made for recess, and that's, you know, spending time outside on a playground during a school day. Here in the U.S., recess time for kids has been shrinking in favor of more classroom time. But here you have children with developing brains being exposed to bacteria outside. And so this could be a good thing for their intelligence, their ability to learn, and their well-being. So You know, I've always enjoyed recess, so it's a good enough argument for me.
Yeah, we should all have more recess.
Right, and we can justify that with this story. You can find it on abcnews.com, sciencedaily.com, discovery.com, among others.
Thanks, Ryan.
You're welcome.
Earth Sky is Ryan Britton. We're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. This is Earth Sky. Wild tigers are in trouble. That is, they're nearly extinct. That's according to Dr. John Seidensticker. Beth Lebwohl is here with the story.
Hey, thanks, Jorge. So John Seidensticker is a senior scientist at the Smithsonian's National Zoological Park in Washington, D.C. And I spoke to him in late 2010, just after he came back from a meeting in St. Petersburg, Russia. It was organized as an international effort to prevent wild tigers' extinction, because they're on their way. Dr. Seidensticker explained that only about 3,200 tigers remain in the wild. All of them live in Asia.
3,200 would be a nice number of tigers if you had them in one place or two or three places. But in fact, they're divided up into probably more than 76 small populations that are not connected anymore.
Experts predict that without international intervention, wild tigers will go extinct by the year 2022. Seidensticker explained why.
Tigers have been recognized as endangered for 40 years. But in that 40-year period, they're twice the number of people that live in the Asian countries where tigers live.
To support Asia's double-digit population growth, and also economic growth, tiger habitat has been eaten up. In addition, Seidensticker said, poaching is another major threat to tigers.
There's an increased demand for tiger hides, for decor. There's an increased demand for meat. So we have a massive illegal wildlife trade that's not under control.
Beth, about the meeting in St. Petersburg, how did it even come to pass?
Good question, Jorge. It was called by the president of Russia and also the head of the World Bank. And also attending were representatives of a bunch of Asian nations. Seidensticker said it was actually unprecedented to get so many countries at the same table. Nepal, China, Russia, Bangladesh, and Laos were the five major players. And some of these countries actually don't have good political relations.
So what really happened at the Tiger meeting?
Well, in short, they declared a willingness to double the number of tigers in the world within the next 12 years. And these countries are all working together to get the legal and the financial backing. Dr. Seidensticker himself was sort of musing, if we can't manage to save tigers, can we manage to save any animal at all? Because tigers figure so prominently in the collective imagination.
Thanks, Beth.
Hey, thank you, Jorge.
Earth Sky's Beth Lebwohl. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science. This is Earth Sky. We interview the world's top scientists. On the line now is neuroscientist Mark Changizi, author of the book The Vision Revolution. In it, he examines how evolution shaped what and how humans see the world. He's here to explain why our eyes face forward instead of having one eye in the back of our heads. Dr. Changizi, why do our eyes face forward?
I had this intuition that eyes are situated on the head, facing forward or facing sideways, just to do one thing, to maximize how much the animal can see, period. There's just one thing, see the most. And it turns out that everybody has seen this kind of thing before. If you hold up your finger vertically in front of your face and you look beyond your finger, you'll see two copies of your finger and they'll be rendered transparently. If you hold up all of your fingers in front of your eye, you'll see sort of copies of your hand, two copies of your hand rendered transparently, and yet you'll almost miss none of the scene beyond. That takes special mechanisms, special peaking mechanisms in some sense. Here's another thing. Put keep both eyes open, but put one hand over one of your eyes, keep again both eyes open, you'll see a transparent hand through which you're seeing the world beyond. Notice that you're not seeing a world through which you're seeing it transparently to see a hand beyond. As one eye is getting hand, one eye is getting world, why aren't you seeing a world transparently rendered through which you see a hand? How does your brain know to put one behind the other? It's just the eyes are getting completely different things. By having two eyes in different positions, it allows you to see past clutter, like your fingers in front of you, and each eye ends up with very different views beyond the clutter. In fact, with not anything similar about them. But what your brain is good at is putting those puzzle pieces together to create a single unified image of what's beyond that layer of clutter. So the idea was that could it be that forward-facing eyes have evolved to tap into that? And when it would pay off is when you're a big animal with eyes that are widely separated relative to leaves, and you're in a forest. So animals, and the fundamental prediction was that if you're an animal in the plains, you should have sideways-facing eyes, no matter whether you're small or large. But if you're an animal in the forest, you should have. If you're small in the forest, you should just have sideways-facing eyes still, because your eyes are so close together on your head, you can't see past leaves. It would be like us trying to see around a Winnebago. But when you get bigger and bigger in the forest, your eyes become this X-ray power, this power to see past your own fingers, so to speak. I use it as a metaphor. Suddenly kicks in, the math changes, and it becomes, you can see the most in your forested environment when you actually have eyes facing forward, because just you see so much beyond that layer of clutter out front by virtue of having two eyes looking in that direction that it outweighs the fact that you're blind behind. So it seems that forward-facing eyes are for seeing better in forests and sideways-facing eyes. It's always, your eye position is optimized to allow you to see the most, given that you've got two eyes. It doesn't have anything to do with stereo vision or 3D. Or predators, or it's just see the most in the environment that you're in.
That was neuroscientist Mark Changizi. And that's our show. Thanks for joining us on Earth Skies 22. This week's show was recorded at the Earth Sky Studios in Austin, Texas, live music capital of the world. Our producer is Michael Brennan. Executive producers Peter Zandan, Ryan Britton, and Deborah Bird. Special thanks this week to our musical contributors, The Black and White Years, The Bright Light Social Hour, 100 Flowers, Built by Snow, and Dana Falconberry. For more information on the science and the music you heard this week, visit our website at earthsky.org. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
There are too many artists, too much art, and not enough genius, I believe. Science is the art of the next age. There are so many artists, too much heart, and not enough reason, I'm afraid. Silence is the song of the next stage.